civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good morning again in Tribe World. I hope you're all doing well in these challenging and troubled times. It's a great pleasure to have the chance to have another chat and an interview and a podcast. And I'm joined now with, I know, an extreme favorite of all within the Tribe fandom, the very talented and lovely and beautiful Michelle Ang, best known as Tai Sang. Good morning, Michelle.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me on. And hello to everyone out there. Thanks for tuning in.
No, it's lovely to hear your voice. We keep in touch over the years, and I watch your career with great pride to see how well you're doing. You've been in America for a while, but you're now back in New Zealand. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. I've been, I sort of headed off to America and then accidentally stayed there for, I think it was over, was in America for over 10 years. And only recently just made the shift back home to be closer to friends and family.
Oh, that's nice. And how are you coping with this lockdown?
I am very grateful to be in New Zealand. I think we're blessed with a really great cohesive leadership. Unfortunately, I have a lot of friends who are obviously in America, and I think the level of anxiety and fear from the way that their government is kind of dealing with it is a lot more destabilizing than what we're experiencing here. So I am very grateful to be here, and our world might have shrunk, but our time seems to have expanded, and that's a lovely thing.
So Michelle, since coming back, and how do you occupy your days in the lockdown?
Well, I try and keep to some sort of schedule, because I think it's kind of a gift. I'm sort of viewing this time as a gift to really drill down on doing some of those things that are on your wish list but keep getting pushed to the side. So I kind of try and structure my day, get up, do some yoga. And sometimes, you know, you wake up with a bit of anxiety. So I try and do something physical in the morning, and then I have a little one, so I'll proportion part of the day to make sure he gets excellent one-on-one playtime, and currently that involves a lot of walks and looking for teddy bears, because New Zealand has done this really wonderful thing where they've put teddy bears in the windows for children to walk around the neighbourhood and spy. And then a little bit of admin, and I'm actually making a transition into becoming a writer-director. So I have a couple of different projects that I'm juggling, so I try and put some of my day towards working on those.
Do you enjoy the writing, Michelle?
I can't say I'm a natural writer, no. I think I have quite a strong visual sense, but it's really hard to sort of break into just being a director, and I think if you're able to put your ideas down on paper in a writing form and then have a chance to sort of get that up on its feet and direct it, then that's a great way to sort of say to the world, this is what I'm interested in, and this is how I see, you know, how my creativity works. So I'm trying to push myself past that writing block and become a writer as well.
Oh, good for you. I mean, I think that's we were speaking before we started recording, just before the interview started, and I was mentioning to Michelle my grandson is, I tried to steer him, you know, into a so-called normal job, but creativity, it's like an itch, isn't it, Michelle? You've got to scratch it.
I know. Well, I mean, you know, part of the reason why I'm looking at a transition is obviously acting is so wonderful, but it really is a ludicrous career because it's completely out of your hands, and you can be the best, most talented actor, but it doesn't mean you get a job. And definitely in this sort of position in my life as a mother, I'm like, okay, I need to be a little bit more sort of stable, but I kind of have chosen perhaps another equally tentative stable industry, because writing and directing is probably just as tough as acting, but that creative calling is something that is hard to ignore.
Michelle, you'd be excellent in as a director, and I think the writing, it's in us all. I mean, the storytelling has been with us all since time began, really. It's the greatest thing, and it's interesting. I mean, I have a love hate with writing, and I call it like a self-inflicted nervous breakdown, you know, living with the blank page. It's amazing, but And Michelle, you're enjoying motherhood, obviously, and that's terrific. And your fans will be interested to know that Michelle has a little one. So Michelle, after the tribe, and I've got a lot of questions, so I'll not kind of hog you for myself. I'm just interested in a few different elements, but I'll try and get to as many questions as we can. Let's go before the tribe. That you're. Mum and Dad, I recall, were Indonesian and immigrated to New Zealand.
Malaysian.
That's right. You were born in New Zealand, though, were you?
Yes, I was. Yep, I was born in New Zealand. My parents came over to New Zealand to study university in the 70s, and they actually met each other over here in Christchurch. Oh,
fantastic. And so you were raised, and I know this for sure, that you are a very gifted and talented dancer. You had that as a little girl. You studied ballet. You appeared in a lot of different productions, didn't you?
Yeah, I know. It's been a long time since I've called myself a dancer, but yeah, when I was young, that was me. I was training to be a ballet dancer with the Royal New Zealand Ballet at the age of, I think I was 9. Maybe one of the young, yeah, we were called junior associates, and I did a lot of stage performance and. Yeah, that was really sort of my first discovery of the arts before I moved into acting.
Wow, isn't that terrific? I didn't realize you were the role. And what were some of the ballets that you did?
Oh, so basically it was a program for around 9 or 10 young children, I guess, to train after school. So after school, we'd do 3 hours worth of rehearsals at the company, the Royal New Zealand Ballet Studios, with the same teachers that the company were learning under. So it was a really rigorous, it was very rigorous training, like a proper professional training. But it did mean that we got to play all the child roles in the company ballets. So obviously Romeo and Juliet, Giselle, the Nutcracker. It was wonderful. I remember, you know, getting fitted for costumes and, you know, the long rehearsal days with the rest of the company. But being a young girl, it seemed like a dream come true, even though it was a lot of hard work.
Yeah, tremendous. Lovely experience for you, though. And Michelle, you first came to my notice. I mean, God, it's got to be 22 years ago, I think, when we were doing William Shatner's A Twist in the Tale. And from that when we were doing as you're doing now, when I was kind of filling those blank pages with Harry and our writing team and the character of Tyson came into being, we thought, oh, I know who could be interested in that. So you were cast as Tyson. And what was it like, Michelle, as a young lass to be thrust into the world of the tribe and that kind of discipline and routine? It was a lot of hard work for a young person because you had to continue your education as well, didn't you?
Yeah, it's true. I think maybe that's where the ballet training put me in good stead. I think I'd already gotten quite used to, as a child, having a rigorous schedule. My first television appearance was as part of something called McDonald's Young Entertainers, which was like a variety show, which meant that after school I had to again go to a studio and rehearse for a couple of hours, and then recording days were long shoot days, 14 hours in front of a live audience. So I'd had a little bit of a taste of it. And I think that put me in good stead because, yeah, when we made the tribe, we were teenagers, but we were working like professional adults, and it was a great lesson to have a good work ethic. And I have to say, I really enjoyed being in the green dress, which was the name of the episode of my Twist in the Tale, and I loved playing. My character's name is Misha, I think, and I thought it was really cool. Currently there's a lot of talk about diversity and having different sort of faces and cultural identities, but I think I was really privileged, and that's thanks to you, Ray, and your writing team, because I never really felt kind of pigeonholed. Like, my character in the green dress was just an average high schooler, nothing more, nothing less. She was a character of her own right, nothing to do with the fact that I was of Asian descent. So thanks.
My pleasure. No, that's I kind of agree with you. I think it's very important for diversity to really reflect the world we inhabit, and all views and all books and all cultures. Otherwise it becomes a bit with one stroke, really, that Michelle, just for some of the listeners overseas, and obviously the New Zealanders will remember the McDonald's Young Enterprise. I forgot about that. Actually, that was a huge series in New Zealand, and you, I mean, that, the nation every Saturday night, I think, and it was live, wasn't it?
It was taped, it was recorded live, but not live to television. So we had to perform to a live audience, but the actual broadcast was at a different date. Yeah. But it was special. It was kind of before the American Idols. It was very much kind of like the Mickey Mouse Club, where there were a troupe of regular young children who were the interstitial acts between these competitors that had been, you know, taken from the public, and everyone was trying to win the grand prize. So there was, you know, the competition round, and then a semi-final, and then the final. But then myself with the other super troopers, we were called, were kind of the regular acts, and people got to really, I guess, feel like they had a relationship with us. And I recently had a little laugh. Someone had posted the VHS recordings of the shows up on YouTube. That's how old it was. Yeah.
Now, a bit of trivia for the Tribe fans, that Drew Nemia, who played Fisheye in the Tribe, was in the McDonald's series as well, if I'm not mistaken.
He was, absolutely, yes.
So, Michelle, throughout the Tribe, we get a lot of people saying, why did Tyson disappear in that? But we used to try and write around you, because you were doing your education, and if we may, you then went off to university and you got your degrees, I believe. You got a couple of degrees, didn't you?
Yeah, somehow in amongst my acting vocation, I managed to get a chemistry degree and an accounting with commercial law degree. And it's safe to say I haven't actually used either of them in my professional life to date.
Polar opposites, isn't it?
I wanted to do an industrial design degree in chemistry, so a science and design, because I was really interested in, at that time, there was a lot of new materials being made, and I thought it'd be quite cool to do like a science design commingling. But both of those degrees require lots of lab work, and because I often had to be away recording or shooting, I couldn't do that. And I remember the dean of the design department saying, he's like, you are a very strange person. He's like, I don't know anyone else in our school who has tried to commingle design with chemistry. And we have conflicting schedules because of this. And he's like, it wasn't going to work, unfortunately. So when I continued to do my acting jobs, I ended up having to switch from my design degree to my accounting degree, which was able to be done via distance.
Well, isn't that interesting? That's quite different and very unique. And are you still interested in design, Michelle? Do you still like design?
I do. I think time is a little bit more limited these days, but I've always been drawn to things that are aesthetically sort of interesting or beautiful as well as useful. And I don't know, I guess, yeah, I'm a Libra, so I like to be surrounded by beauty and things that are sort of pleasing, if that makes sense.
I mean, that's great. And Michelle, you did some of the tours with the Tribe, didn't you?
I did one to the UK. I think it was the second one that we ever went on.
Okay, that's right. There was, because we did quite a few of them, and again, it was always difficult to schedule because of some of the educational commitments. And how was that for you, Michelle? Did you enjoy that, the chance to meet the fans and to see how your work was kind of touching people? It manifested, the reaction was quite profound, wasn't it, really?
Yes, it was crazy, because we were just away in our little bubble down here in Lower Hutt, Wellington, which is not exactly the most glamorous place, and we're just making our work. And then being flown to the other side of the world, where people, like you say, were really connecting with what we were creating, and who knew our characters and who loved our characters and wanted to see, you know, our characters in costume. I remember sort of being amazed at the production design of what the Tribe world was. Like, our costume designer and makeup designers were doing such incredible things, but then taking that over to the UK and, like, coming to meet our fans in costume with makeup and watching people's reactions, it was really special and a little, yeah, really eye-opening. And then also I think we were, on my particular trip, we were invited to perform at, I can't remember the name of the show, it was something like Top of the Pops or something, and we were able to meet some of the people that I sort of was fangirling over, like some of the pop stars of the time over there, so it was really surreal.
That's amazing. We'll can say, I was having a chat with some of the other cast and some of the other podcasts, Michelle, and at that time where actually the Tribe wasn't shown in New Zealand, so I mean obviously you would have a profile doing, having done the McDonald's show, but generally you know, in New Zealand the celebrity is a bit different to other parts of the world, so for young people to as you say, in the bubbles shooting this series and not realizing, I mean knowing that it was connecting with people, but to actually arrive and to see that passion and that kind of fanaticism would have, I think you all, I've admired and respected how you all kept your feet firmly on the ground. And what I was,
I think
really,
that's the New Zealand sort of value system though. Like, I think it's wonderful because, you know, we as a culture are very, we love to keep things really egalitarian, just like our Prime Minister, who's our leader, would just, yeah, would just as soon line up in line to get her coffee as opposed to push to the front. Like, I think that's a real, like, a symptomatically wonderful thing of being a New Zealander.
I agree with that, and it's in the nation's psyche. And I mean, it's interesting. In you know, we were talking earlier about my vineyard before we recorded, and we get a lot of really high-profile people that come and are a bit worried of the paparazzi are around, and I always say, don't worry, there's nobody's going to bug you. I mean, they're more interested in who won the sheep shearing competition, or there's no need for security. People don't bug you. It's a lovely, it's a life as it used to be. And so Michelle, after the Tribe, when did you move out to, did you move out to the States for professional reasons or to, for a role, and kind of ended up staying there? How did that come about?
When the Tribe finished, I stayed in New Zealand and did a couple of other local productions, and then I went over to Melbourne in Australia, where I did a spot on Neighbours, which is a soap that's made in Australia, but is pretty popular in the UK.
For some of the other countries, Neighbours is an iconic series, really, in the UK. I mean, it's been running for, it's a major, big one, and obviously in Australia. And how did you enjoy, yes, did you enjoy going from Thai Sand to a new character in Neighbours? Was it obviously different?
I'll tell you what, that training that we had, because the Tribe was, you know, fast turnaround. Neighbours is extremely fast turnaround, and I, having not gone to, you know, a professional acting school, the Tribe was really my form of schooling. It put me in really good stead because I was not at all fazed by the fast turnaround shooting style of Neighbours. But I remember it was pretty gutsy. They were holding auditions in Auckland, which is a city just north of where I was living in Wellington. And I remember I caught the train up, and I didn't tell my parents. I caught the train up to do this audition and then caught the train back. And when I got the call to say, hey, you got the role and we'll need you to move to Australia, I remember thinking, oh gosh, that's so exciting. But I haven't even told my parents that I had even put my name into the hat to be part of this. How am I going to break that? It was a pretty, thinking back on it now, it was a pretty gutsy thing to do.
To Melbourne, and did you, it's a lovely city, and that's a, you enjoyed your time in Australia?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, it was kind of that real burgeoning feeling of like being a young person who could, you know, go and earn some of her own money and then do her own thing. I was flatting over there with another castmate who was also a Kiwi. It was a pretty wild time. It was a bit hedonistic, but I think we all have to have some of those experiences in our young life.
Oh, you've got to do that. I mean, I'm an ex-hippie and I had mine in the 60s. So, you know, I mean, that's, you've got to do that. And, yeah. I lived through peace and love and Flower Power, and interesting, actually, that's where probably the Tribe, I mean, what we aspired to do on that series all came about, really, just young people trying to build a better world and to rebel against the previous generations. And Michelle, I've got a question here from Richard Weston. Good morning, Richard. And that segues into you saying, would you like the opportunity to play Titus Sand again? What was it like going straight into the soap opera Neighbours after The Tribe? How did that audition come about following The Tribe's success? So you've answered a couple of points there, but would you like the opportunity to play Titus Sand again if it ever came up?
Yes, and I think, you know, Tyson was such a unique character to play at that young age because I would have been 15, and I wasn't as worldly wise as her. I think she was kind of the voice of reason and calmness and mysticism, and I really connected with that, and I kind of feel like my own interest in mysticism and spirituality might have even come about because I was given the opportunity to play a character who was so much about that. I think if I was to play Tyson now, there would be, I think, you know, with age and maturity comes this sort of realization that nothing is as easy or as perfect a solution as it seems. And I think kind of the interesting thing, if I think back about how I probably played Tyson back when I was 15, it probably would have been with this real earnestness, you know, this real belief. Like, I think I was really able at 15 to believe in what Tyson was saying because I didn't have that cynicism of being a little older and a little worldlier.
No, so that's an interesting thing. And it's a, you know, you may or may not be aware, but, you know, we've been developing a motion picture and a sequel for a while, and it's such a different industry now. It's Hollywood being Hollywood, you'll know, having lived out there. It's these things take time, and it's on off, could be maybe, but I got sick of it, Michelle, and only want to do it if I could do it the right way, and I'd like wanted. There's no way I would ever want to do it unless we could work with the same cast, and I loved. I'm obviously a big fan of yours, and not just your talent, but as a human being. And that's what, you know, we, as I often say, we don't just cast people for their talent, but for their spirit, for their being. And you're a special person. And so I'd work with you in a heartbeat, Michelle. And I'm sure one day we will again. Hopefully it's on the track.
If not, Ray, that's so lovely of you to say. And I do think, you know, there's something to be said about how you chose at the cast, because I'm still really good friends with a lot of them, and you're right, there was something about all of us that despite being incredible actors, just really sort of good balanced humans who could look out for each other, and I'm really grateful for you for bringing us all together, because a lot of them have become my lifelong friends.
No, that's nice to hear as well. And you know, it is. I mean, you know, a lot of people are always asking, what was it like? And I suppose we are, or were, or still are in many ways, like a family, like a tribe within a tribe. And that's nice. I mean, as a microscope, a small speck of society where, you know, everybody's growing older. I was the father of the tribe. Now I'm the grandfather. And now, you know, I was speaking with Mike Wesley Smith yesterday, and he's now a dad, and he's now the father, and it's lovely. It's
it's a circle of life, isn't it?
And now I've got a question with and here's somebody that Matthew Jones. Good morning, Matthew. That's a very familiar name. Matthew has been a lifelong Tribe fan, and he's been competition winners, and I've actually spoken with Matthew many times. So hi, Matthew. I've got your question for Michelle. What ways are you like Tyson, and what ways are you not?
Hi, Matthew. That's a good question. I have to really sort of think back, because Tyson went through quite an evolution from when she started in the tribe to who she turned out to be when she was sort of like the supreme mother, and a lot. She sort of, yeah, she was quite different from how she started. I think I'm probably more similar to the early version of Tyson. I have a real affinity and connection to nature. I feel, I really believe in the fact that energetically we are all connected and that there is something larger than each and every one of us that has this sort of guiding, holistic sort of energy ray that is why we're all here, that whole idea of like the meaning of life. I think I'm probably, I'd like to think I'm less stubborn than Tyson. I think she was pretty stubborn. she certainly had her ideas, and I do remember there being some conflicts with some of the other characters when they wanted to challenge her. I don't think I'm as stubborn as Tyson, and I don't particularly sit well in positions of hierarchy or power. I don't know. I just kind of have an aversion to that. I'd much rather kind of do my own thing outside of the status quo a little bit. I'm a bit of a hermit, a bit of a recluse, and I think Tyson sort of ended up being someone who really wanted to be in power, and I don't think I'm like that.
A lot of the feedback we got from the fans while we were shooting and making the series, and subsequently since that time, that they connected with your character in a very profound way. And I think that your character was a conduit to something that's inherent in the human condition. And that is this need. I mean, in this fast-paced material world, you know, where everything is instant and running to catch planes and status and careers and money and pressures, that we've evolved so fast, really, as human beings, that we've kind of sometimes need to slow down to the speed of life. And we were saying earlier, Michelle, that this situation is possibly a chance to pause and self-reflect and think, is there a better way to live our life? And what is of true value? And that's something I think we're probably all aware of right now, that this virus has come out of left field, and we've been forced to stop, even if we not by our own choice, and to think. And what's your feelings on that?
Yeah, I think you sort of summarized our earlier conversation really well. I totally acknowledge that I'm in a position of privilege. I have a roof over my head, and I am able to purchase food for myself and my family. I understand that that's a position of privilege, because a lot of people are having a much more frightening sort of survival experience. Having said that, I think it is exactly that. The speed of modern life has kind of gotten out of control, and I personally crave sort of times of quiet reflection. And I think by sitting still and actually looking at some of the problems that we have started to generate in this fast-paced society, we might become aware of them and maybe sidestep them. It might give us a chance to reset and reconsider where our value systems lie. I'm a bit of a technophobe, which is why I've probably been really bad at keeping in touch with all the fans, because a lot of them are so wonderful at using the online resources. I think that there is an important part that technology can play, but I think we're really seeing this hunger or disease of connection, you know. In America, I think there was a really crazy statistic about how many people feel lonely. And I read this amazing article. I think in the UK they set up a minister for loneliness. And I think that's sort of saying something about us as humans. We might have Instagram accounts and Twitter accounts that we post to every day, but speaking for myself, I want to cultivate these sort of feelings of people in real life or within my close community, so that I can actually have like a physical exchange. I draw lots of energy from that, and I think we need to rebalance that a little bit and have a bit more of a plugged in kind of physical realm of our humanity as well as a technological one.
I totally agree with you. I mean, Michelle was laughing earlier, where I'm terrible at technology. I mean, I can't even change a light bulb. But my grandchildren, you know, I can't work a phone. It's true. You know, I've got these phones, and when the phone rings, I can't. I don't know. It's like, it's this. And I end up with the books. Listen, so what I wanted and what I do want for my birthday, I've said, I just want a phone. All I want to do is to, I don't want to take pictures. I just want to make a phone call. You know, and
you know, Ray, that's the new cool. I've heard that now people are remaking the old phones, like the flip phones that you can't even send a text message on, just the answer and hang up button. That's the new cool. So you're ahead of your time once again.
All right, Nick. And Michelle, I can kind of really relate to what you're saying about, you know, the kind of the spirituality and you know, the vineyard. I mean, it's a spiritual place for me, and I think we all need that to get in tune with Mother Nature and the natural world and the joys and the beauty. You know, I often think, you know, as I've said, you can't ignore the whisper of mortality that inhabits every fading sunset. And to be in tune with that, you need to look at the sunset, I suppose, and appreciate it, and really, you know, every day passes. Michelle, you were saying about your meditation. That's another lovely thing to do to kind of help with your anxieties and that. But we have a lot of letters. There's a lot of people out there that are really struggling at this time, and frightened people and anxious people. And have you any thoughts or any advice you could give to those kind of people?
Oh, gosh, that would be like a magic bullet, wouldn't it? I think it's totally reasonable to feel really shaken. Like I said, I'm in a privileged position, and I still wake up in the morning sometimes just feeling really ill at ease. And I think part of it is recognizing how to create some space for yourself when you're feeling anxious. So I'm a really big believer in breathing techniques, which is why I love yoga, because you take these poses, but really it's sort of like a channeling of breath. And sometimes it feels like the least exciting thing to do, or that, you know, like I'm like, oh, do I really have to do it? But I always feel so much better, even after 5 minutes of just being aware that I'm alive and feeling that breath in my lungs and breathing out slowly. So that's sort of like a body way of feeling and a little bit more in control. I think on a larger scale, we have to put our faith in the people who are leading our countries, and sort of look for opportunities that we can either lend our voice to guide the leaders in the direction that we want, in terms of our civic responsibilities or our opportunity to vote or express a view. And then in a neighbourhood sort of level, I think there's apps called Neighbourly or something else that connects you with the people who are like around you. So sort of reaching out and checking in on your neighbours, or if you have like elderly people in your neighbourhood who need an extra bit of hand. I think one of the best ways to get rid of feeling anxious is to actually do something. So doing an act of kindness or doing an act of charity actually makes not only that person feel good, but you'll be surprised at how amazing it makes you feel to have some sort of altruistic purpose in your day. And it could be something little. It could be like, I don't know, picking some wildflowers and then leaving them on someone's mailbox just as a little gesture to brighten their day or something.
I think that's great advice. I totally agree. And also, for those perhaps who are alone, and there are many who are alone at this point, not to be frightened to pick up a phone, and as long as you can use it, if you're not like me, but I mean, to pick up and speak and to be honest and to don't think of it as a sign of weakness or to be embarrassed, but to phone somebody and say, look, I'm really struggling or I'm afraid. I mean, you mentioned, Michelle, about interacting, you know, on a human level. And I think, you know, kind of communication is so important, and whether it's 2 people or 10 people. I mean, as we're doing today, we're talking, and it's very therapeutic. And this is me as an old hippie, as a granddad, and I'm not as young as old as I look as one of those. But I find it very refreshing to speak with you, Michelle, because the character Tysanne was very important for me, because my mother, bless her, she was part Romany Gypsy, part Scottish, but very spiritual lady. And she used to teach me that, you know, in homeopathic medicines and all this kind of stuff, when, you know, where a nettle grows, a dock leaf will be nearby, and this saying about fear makes the wolf bigger. And so Thay San paid a lot of homage in some ways, and the roots, and as a writer, you'll know we all draw as you do as an actor on your kind of personal inspirations or experiences. And then you took that, and you have always been a very spiritual lady, even as a child, Michelle, and no doubt the listeners will hear that just how you're speaking now, that you sound like Thay San, and that's beautiful and very special, and I think very if I may say so. And I think, were you raised that way? Are you religious, Michelle, or were you mum and dad? Where did you get kind of that?
I don't know, Ray. That's really funny or interesting that you say that, because obviously I've been with myself since forever, so I don't have that perspective. I think I've just always found a lot of comfort in that way of thinking. It just brings me peace. Like my mum's father, so my maternal grandfather, he was quite a spiritualist. He was a palm reader. And a lot of Chinese sort of old culture comes as a mix of spiritual ideas mixed with like sort of a little bit of religion, a little bit of cultural practice, but it's all really sort of intermingled. Like, you know, you never questioned the fact that your ancestors were always around you. You know, this idea of like another world or ghosts, paying respect to people who've gone before. So that's sort of, I was brought up like that. And my mum is a really sort of interesting mix. She's very Western in her thinking. And so she always encouraged me. We used to say prayers at night. And she always used to encourage me to talk about my burdens and like let them out, you know, with breath, just from a really young age. And she'll still tell me that, like when I'm really going through a rough time and I call her for some solace, she'll be like, Michelle, just say a prayer and like let it out, let the universe help you figure it out, but you've got to breathe it out and offer it to, in order for it to be answered. So I've always kind of been, I've always sort of leaned on that other way of thinking about how everything works to feel like I can get through things.
That's great. I mean, I think you're right as well. It's the Chinese culture and actually Japanese as well, the Shinto religion, where it's all things living they worship, and to be aware of, as you say, we're all interconnected, the earth, the sky, the sea, but I mean, as human beings and that's right. And here we are, we're connecting with, you know, our tribal brothers and sisters, as we say, all over the world. And at this time where there is a collective consciousness where only in times of war, I suppose, does this become. And here we're all now faced with the same dilemma, we're all in lockdown. And I was laughing actually with Michelle earlier. I now know how a dog feels, because every time I see somebody walking outside, I run to the window and seem to yelp to go out, and go for a walk is so beautiful and special now. And that's as you said earlier, Michelle, it's the little things, these, to take that moment of space and time, isn't it, really, to in whatever form that might be. And that's great. So I'm just going to try and get onto some other questions here. So Michelle, okay. Monahan, she's and I think we've answered a lot of this. What do you think of Thay San's spiritual beliefs and approaches to situations in the tribe? I mean, I suppose as a young actress, Michelle, when you'd get the scripts, and as you say, possibly at the time, although you were instinctively and I suspect intuitively relaying in many ways as both a person and as an actress to the character. But I mean, she was a great leveler to the tribe and presented a diversity and a different dimension. And did you feel that some of the scenes kind of grounded the members of the tribe?
Oh, definitely. I had a little laugh when you said presented another dimension, because I definitely think, you know, there were times when she was viewed from the rest of the collective as being pretty far out there. I really liked the different, her different outlook on things. And she was always this sort of this voice that stood out from what the rest of the rabble were trying to say. Her focus in the early chapters of the tribe, so her focus on finding a virus and keeping, not really even keeping the peace. I sort of remember her being as sort of a sage in the sense that, like, nothing is all good or all bad. That real proponent for the grey and finding peace in the grey. I kind of remember, like, Amber getting frustrated because she couldn't get a straight answer out of Tysam, but I think that's because Tysam was so very much existing in the middleness of everything, in the greyness.
Right in the moment, really. I mean, they call it mindfulness, but it truly is living in the moment, and that's an important element as well, where not worrying too much about the future or dwelling on the past, but to live in the moment. And that's a very difficult thing to do, I think. And for anxiety, I always think it's like fast food. If you feed it, you know, it can really make it worse. Where things rarely evolve or turn out to be as bad as one imagines or fears, I reckon, in life. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, but I think it's easy to have that when you've got perspective, or like if you're a little further along in your life journey. I think, you know, for me, I was always one of those people that really loved the arts, for the very reason that when I was feeling really sad or anxious, I could kind of dig deep into it. I'm a bit of a lean-in, emotional kind of person. So if I love reading beautiful stories or poems or listening to beautiful music and kind of letting that emotionality figure its own way through me and not denying it too much, sort of just really recognizing that that is how I'm feeling at this present point in time. And, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a good time to look at arts and sort of find the medium that speaks to your pain, and sort of like, yeah, dig a little into it and let it wash clean, sort of.
Do you have any favorite music, Michelle? What kind of music? You've got a wide range, I would imagine, of musical taste.
Oh, yeah, I'm all over the map, and I'm really bad at answering this question because I'm very, like, of the moment, what am I into right now? But, I love melancholic music, and there's a really beautiful Australian artist called Rye X I've been playing a lot, and if you're feeling melancholic and you want to lean into that, I would suggest looking up his music, R-Y space X. He's beautiful.
I'm going to check him out later today because I certainly love all that stuff as well. But I've got another question from this is all from our YouTube, from Bloody Misha. Hello, Bloody Misha. I hope you're doing well. So I'll just read this out. Hey, Michelle, which character was your favorite aside from Tysan? And which other characters would you have been most interested in playing? I'd also love to know what your favorite memories are back from when you were filming the show, a scene that you really liked filming, a nice moment with your cast mates that you remember very well, or with people who became very great friends behind the scenes. So there's a few different questions within there, but do you have any memories of a favorite scene or a hard scene or a hateful scene or?
I remember when we were shooting, I think it was the finale of the first season, and we were in subalpine mountainous areas and it was freezing and there was a globe kind of building. I can't remember the exact storyline. I think we were breaking into some facility. Right. And I was with
Eagle Mountain,
Amber.
Up in the
yes, Eagle Mountain. That's right. That's right. I just remember that feeling of real camaraderie with the crew and the cast because, we were shooting outdoors. And I always loved being on location. But, yeah, it was cold and it was a pretty brutal temperature while we were up there. But we got through it. And then there was also a beach. I remember doing that dance on the beach, which I think ended up being used as part of the opening titles.
That's right.
Yeah, that was a very majestic moment.
Oh, that's right. But I've got an interesting one here from Megan Boss. Good morning, Megan. What is one acting role you auditioned for and really wanted but didn't get?
Oh my gosh, so many. I could give you so many. I have a tendency to fall in love with characters before I have been given permission to play them. there are so many. Harry Potter's love interest was one, Cho Chang. I remember auditioning for her in the UK before the first Harry Potter movie came out. More recently, I auditioned for the lead in Alex Garland's new television series called Devs, which I haven't seen it yet, but Sonoya Mizuna, who he worked with before in Ex Machina, plays the character that I was wanting to play. And she's a developer in this really sort of austere computer programming world. So I was really gutted to miss out on that. Oh, what else? So many. Yeah. I kind of fall in love with all my characters that I audition for.
Again, we were speaking earlier with Michel, my grandson, who I've tried to steer him away from it because he is desperate to be a film director and a writer. And it's a heartbreak business, and because it's not down to talent. It's looking at it from the other side, very often, you know, we'll cast people for different looks or heights or weights or whatever it is. You know, it's not always talent. But it's, you wear your heart on your sleeve as a creative being. And I often say, don't listen to critics. And either way, I mean, whether people are applauding or booing, but because it can drive you nuts, but it makes you vulnerable. And that's important to keep that vulnerability, I think, and to not get too hardened by it. But no, it's interesting that, so bear with me, Michelle, I'm just reading from, this is again on our time, from Gaga. Good morning, Gaga. Hi, Michelle. Tell us more about your daily life, like day schedules, morning routines, and diet, but as well, what about your trips maybe in Eastern Europe, since I'm writing from Serbia? And would you like to know if you have ever been here, would like to visit it? Have you ever visited Eastern Europe at all, Michelle?
Oh, no, I haven't. And honestly, that is on my bucket list. I've never been to Serbia, although the building manager at my Los Angeles apartment block was from there, and he always had such a great sense of humor and a great outlook in life. And if he is sort of like a example of the Serbian joie de vivre, then I'd love to go and visit. Right now, obviously, with the lockdowns going on, it's kind of a weird time. I don't know when all the borders will be open again. But I have done a lot of traveling on the western side of Europe, so I think Eastern Europe would probably be my first destination once everything gets opened up.
It's interesting, Michelle, that in Bosnia and Croatia, Serbia, that the tribe is huge over there, and we've got a lot of fans there, so you'd be very well received, I've no doubt, if you ever visit, and probably very well, I have to say. No, that's a great part of the world. I've been very lucky that I've been around there in Estonia and lots of great places, Russia, everywhere. And it was amazing. I mean, in some places in Russia, I saw some of the graffiti that was almost like out of the Tribe series and with the Tribe, which was very surreal to be there. And I almost felt like saying to the people, oh, I was involved with that. You know, it's just extraordinary how our work touches people. It's amazing that... So again,
I would love to see. I think that's sort of would be a wonderful. I love being in culture shock, and I just have no real touchstones about the way of life over there. So I'd love to be exposed to that. And then my little boy is sort of his roots on his father's side trace back to Lithuania as well. So there's extra reason to go and connect.
Oh, that would be very, very special. And I've got a question from Hayden Chef. Hayden Cheppers. How would you compare working on The Tribe to other productions you've worked on, like Fear, The Walking Dead?
Well, first of all, having a cast full of teenagers makes some things go by fast and some things go by slow. I think the poor first ADs on The Tribe were sort of continuously getting us to stop talking between takes. I think as a bunch of teenagers, we felt like there was a lot of things that we had to gossip about in between shooting takes. But Fear was kind of actually similar to The Tribe in a way, because it was so dystopian. We were in extreme environments. We were constantly been broken down, which is a term in the industry of like, you know, having mud rubbed into your fingernails or, you know, blood added to your scars. I think Fear the Walking Dead was interesting because on my season we were shooting in Mexico and it was a local crew. So there was an extra language barrier, but the Mexican crews are so hardworking. And yeah, I guess it was similar in the sense that in the way that a lot of the tribe cast members had come from their home cities to live in Wellington while we were shooting, we as a cast on Fear the Walking Dead were also all living in a local hotel in Rosarito. So we were also displaced out of our normal lives, that we weren't living with our family or friends. So that kind of was quite similar.
And that's, again, a huge franchise, The Walking Dead. And Michelle, you were nominated for an Emmy.
I was. Yeah.
How did that come about? I mean, did you open the letter and how did they advise you your nomination? How does that come about?
Oh, it was, my life has been surreal. I'll just put it that. I got a phone call from the showrunner to let me know. And I didn't even know that I was in the running for it or that they were thinking of submitting me. I sort of just got the phone call to say, you've been nominated and this is when the ceremony is going to be. But it was a little bittersweet because for reasons unbeknownst to me, I think they were going through a difficult time on the show. And so that the very next day I got called by the same showrunner to be told that I wasn't going to be written into the amount of episodes that my character was owed. And I never really got a reason for that. And I felt really strange about it because it was the first acting nomination that the entire franchise has ever gotten, because they've gotten wardrobe or special effects, but never an acting nomination. So I was feeling pretty job secure, I guess you could say. And then the very next day I was kind of feeling absolutely flawed. But you know, things happen for a reason, and it turned out that I was pregnant and there was Zika going on at the time, and so things kind of shifted in the way that they needed to, and it resulted in me having to attend to all the Emmy parties and not being able to partake in the drinking and having to find gorgeous dresses that would fit like a round belly, which was very, very difficult.
I can imagine. That's fine. Did you enjoy living in California, in LA, Michelle?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. I'm not really a Los Angelian. I'm a New Yorker. I lived in New York for 4 years. Something wow. about that city, the walkability, the bumping up against all kinds of different people on the subway. I felt like New York was much more my sort of energy. Yeah. Wellington is also a very pedestrian city, so you're sort of used to walking a lot more and being able to get around. LA, I don't know. It's a different kind of beauty. And I always felt a little isolated in LA, to be totally honest. And it's so much about the business in Los Angeles that I found it hard to make real connections with people.
I lived in LA for a while in Hollywood, and a place called the Sunset Marquee on Alta Loma Boulevard in Hollywood. And that was
beautiful.
I actually lived there for a long time. And this is going back when I was a screenwriter in those days. I was very quickly aware, if you get stopped for speeding and the policeman knows you're in the business, he'll slip you a script. And everybody seems to be in the business. And as you said, it's all about the business. And that's fine. I mean, it's Mecca. It's the center of the entertainment universe. And I get that. I understand that. But you know, you long for alternative to that sometimes. And I'm like you. It's beautiful. I love the Venice Beach and all that. But, some Malibu, beautiful. But, you know, you need some balance to that. And New York is, again, a great energy, isn't it? Really a lovely city and just different. And Wellington and, you know, you're up in Auckland now, are you, Michelle, or in Wellington?
Yes. No, I'm in Auckland now.
That's nice. And I know that you're an environmentalist and you care passionately about our planet, as and that's terrific. And we need more people like that. And I know that a thing very close to your heart is you've set up a company and you're involved with Mesa Banks, is it? And so maybe you could explain what that's all about. Now that came into being, where some of our tribal brothers and sisters could go to, and how they might find out more information about that. So how did that come into being, Michelle?
Thanks, Ray. It was an idea that I had while I was pregnant, actually. I was thinking about what I could do to occupy my time while I couldn't be an actor, but also just sort of having a real confrontation about the kind of world that my little one might inherit. And as I think the younger generations are so aware, we create so much plastic waste. We're such a throwaway society. Plastic is, we have plastic cups, plastic cutlery, things come wrapped in plastic needlessly. And this plastic takes thousands of years to break down. And yet we often use like a single plastic bag for less than 10 minutes. So I worked with my best friend from high school, who was also going through a life transition. And we searched for a product that was made out of recycled plastic, and we came up with our reusable produce bags. So basically they are made out of rPET, which is recycled plastic water bottles that have been melted down and restrung out into plastic thread and then sewn into mesh. And you can use these instead of the plastic that you find in your apple or orange, sort of your fruit aisles at the grocery store, and they are BPA free and food grade safe. And then you can wash them, and you can use them for all sorts of other things, like a shower caddy if you're going camping, or I use it to put my little one's beach toys when I go to the beach so that the sand falls out. But basically they're a really durable, reusable bag with a drawstring that you can use again and again, and it's taking plastic that's destined for the landfill and giving it a new life. And well, if anyone loves that, you can buy them online at MISACollective.com. That's M-I-S-A collective.com. And Mesa is my name, Michelle, and my best friend's name, Sarah. We're the two friends that started it. But it also stands for Movement into Sustainable Action. We just want to make it really simple and easy for people to do their part in reducing plastic waste.
Well, that's right. I tell you one thing, you've got a customer in me. I'm going to order my
thigh. Oh, thanks, Ray.
Really terrific. And well done to you. And I fully endorse that. And I think that so any tribal brothers and sisters, you check that out. And that can help. And I think it's good to put into action and to change this planet. And, we have that gift. We can change it if we work together. And
you have to vote with your consumerism. I think that's kind of what I'm really learning. Like, we get to have a say by how we choose to spend our money or who we choose to support. So you can actually make significant change by choosing to purchase like a certain company or brand that are living in the way that you agree with, and taking your money away from people who are not being responsible in your view. So yeah.
Entirely. That's a terrific enterprise, and I think that that's what we need in this world. So well done. Now I've got another question here. This is Kayla La La TV. Kayla La La TV from YouTube, is it? Yeah, that's right. So what was your biggest lesson during filming The Tribe? Was the cast aware of the impact of the show worldwide when you were filming, I guess? Yeah.
No, we weren't. I think we mentioned, might have answered that a little bit in a previous question. We were really just sort of making it. And as Ray mentioned, the tribe wasn't actually even been shown in New Zealand in the early days. So we had no idea really who was consuming it. And then as the internet, gosh, it's so weird to say that, but back then the internet was really just in its infancy. As the internet grew, and a lot of our fans, were early adopters, I think, of like cyber connecting. That's when we sort of started to realize just how big a phenomenon it was. What did I learn from doing The Tribe? So many different things that I could say about that. I don't know. I didn't know. I don't know any different. Like, I think it was a really weird childhood. It was a weird way to grow up as a teenager, because you were really, really close with this very small group of people, who were all great people, but we were all being asked, you know, to perform in certain ways that were really unusual. I think it would be about friendship. I think it's friendship. I think I just got a really wonderful, unique exposure into how you can rely on, lean on, share your growing pains.
Michael, the other day, I had a chat with Michael, and he said friendship as well. Isn't that lovely? That's interesting. And you know,
we were all growing up together, and we had, like, you know, there were spats, of course. You know, there was, you know, alliances, you know, and off screen as well, and yes, you know, friendships being tested, and you know, feeling cool, like feeling you're part of the cool group, and then feeling like you weren't part of a cool group, and you know, processing what does that mean? Who do you sit with at lunch? And just all the normal stuff that I assume would happen if you were in high school, but we were going through it with amazing costumes and sometimes in front of cameras, and yeah, and it was friendship.
Yeah, big story, and that's what I think you all handled those storylines very well. And in some ways, it's like a university in some ways, because the, you know, from bulimia to teenage pregnancy or social justice, self-reliance, all the themes we touched on, the responsibility of technology in seasons 4 and 5 with the technos, and all the things you're saying today, Michelle, about social media. I mean, Ram's Paradise programs, we saw how that polluted some of the characters, and we wanted to, again, I mean, we got into virtual reality. So in so many ways, I mean, without sounding, I mean, it was a bit ahead of its time, and I have to say.
Absolutely. I think it was incredible. I mean, the whole literal sort of virus analogy right now is when you reached out, Ray, you know, to invite me on to share a conversation with you. I hadn't thought about what the tribe had essentially sort of predicted, and we're really living it, a virus that has, you know, that affects the elderly more than the youth, and that is exactly sort of the premise that you created 20 years ago, and you can't help but feel like it's a little, like a bit of a premonition.
It does my head in, I have to say. I mean, I feel like I'm in an episode of it or something, but it's very, very bizarre that. Now, Michelle, our allocation has flown by. It's so fast, and it's amazing. I mean, so, you know, I'll just see if there's any. There's other questions. I just can't get them. I'm so sorry if I've been able to our tribe fandom. I'm so sorry if I've been able to get to your questions, but another day perhaps. And in the meantime, you know, I is there anything you'd like to say to the tribal brothers and sisters at this time, Michelle? Any thoughts as we're
I think I kind of just to reiterate what our leader in New Zealand has been reinforcing here. It's basically stay safe and be kind. Thank you for your support of our series, and for keeping the community alive. And maybe now's a great time to really reach out to the tribe community if you need help or feel like you need a bit of a kindred spirit to connect with. And thank you for giving me this opportunity, Ray, to speak with you again after all this time and to answer some of the questions from you guys out there. Take care.
That's a great pleasure, Michelle. Thank you for that. And on behalf of the tribe fandom, thank you for taking the time to answer them, and it's and good luck. You stay safe and look after yourself, and lots of love to you, and we'll look forward to catching up soon. Goodbye to everybody, and goodbye to you, Michelle. Thank you. Take care.
Bye. Thank you.